Welcome to Side Hustle City, and thanks for joining us. Our goal is to help you connect to real people who found success turning their side hustle into a main hustle, and we hope you can too. I'm Adam Kaler. I'm joined by Kyle Stevie, my co-host. Let's get started. All right, welcome back, everybody, to the Side Hustle City podcast. And we've got a crew with us today. Zach, I guess I was mentoring your startup at Centrifuge, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Man, how long ago was that? It's like 3 months ago?
A little more than that. I think Four months, closer to six.
6 months ago? Golly. So, Zach, introduce your friends.
So, we're here today with Joe Knapp and Jan Almsy.
Almsy,
okay.
And they are part of the team that has, especially Joe, created this magical thing called Ripple.
Yeah, let's talk about it. So I put it on Facebook. I think I put it in the Side Hustle City Facebook group. But Ripple is a really cool concept. And Joe, this is something you – did you come up with this all – like this was your thing?
Yeah, it was birthed in my dorm room about 9 months ago.
Nice. Where at? What dorm room? Like what? Is it Xavier or where'd you go?
No, it's Walsh University. It's up in Canton, Ohio.
Right. Yeah.
Right cool. Next to the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Well, that's not fair. Like, that's you just go to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, like, just roll up in there? Like,
yeah,
they do got students nice... get, like, a discount or anything, too?
No, they don't get a discount, but there's a practice field that's turf outside. It's just cool to go throw a ball around, hang out there.
Oh, man. Oh, I went to Art Institute of Pittsburgh. We didn't even actually have a campus. Downtown Pittsburgh was our campus, pretty much. But
Xavier doesn't even have a football team.
Yeah, really? they used to. They used to.
1973.
Wow.
We haven't lost since then, though.
That's true. But the Bearcats are accepting new bandwagon riders. So if anybody wants to join the Bearcats, we're the number one team in Ohio right now, just if anybody didn't know that. So.
Go Bucks. Go Bucks.
Bucks do look good again. Like they stepped it up. The last couple games, they've looked really good. But yeah, let's hope both of us make it to the playoff. It'd be sweet if we could play each other in national championship.
I'd love like a 2-3 matchup.
Oh, all Ohio. Like, screw Alabama, the SEC, they'd be trash. No good this year because all Ohio, that's what we're rooting for. I've actually got money on it, so let's hope that happens. So Ripple, great idea. Get these sustainable bottles, refillable metal bottles, which are awesome quality. I got one. It's badass. And part of the profits from the sale of these bottles goes to build wells in remote parts of Africa. And you just came back from Uganda.
Yes, correct. Something we just introduced for the bottle, actually launched today, is the transparency bottle. So originally we were selling the bottles for $35, and it was going to be 2,000 bottles builds a well. But like after going there, seeing the impact that we're creating, we're taking more money out of our own pockets to be able to build more wells faster. Because I mean, it's all about the purpose, not the profit of it all. And then we created a transparency bottle showing exactly where every single penny of the bottle is going to make this all possible, which makes no sense for a for-profit model. Like, why would you give away all of your secrets and show everyone where it's going? But it's what we're doing. I want to be completely transparent with our audience that we're building, so that way there's no questions that can be asked to create like a gray area where people might.
Well, because you get on Twitter and everybody wants to like look at every little piece of your business, and some guy who has nothing better to do is just going to be on there like, oh, are they really helping people?
Yeah.
Da-da-da-da-da. You got that guy, right?
Yeah. And so even though we started this 9 months ago, I didn't realize, but there's been a few other little startups that try and sell bottles to build wells too, but they're like, just they don't list out the amount that's given to a well, how many bottles it takes, none of that. So it's really like, oh, you buy a bottle, it gives 10 years of clean water. Like it's a good thought, but like as a consumer, you don't really know your ripple effect that you're creating. So I want to give complete transparency towards it all.
I love it. Thank you, man. So in a way, I'm an investor.
Yes.
This bottle is an investment in this well in Africa. And as an investor, I want to see my return.
Yes.
So I got a great bottle. The product's awesome. It works well. you know, you've got that, you're paying for that. You need a bottle anyway, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're out here, you're exercising, you're doing things, or, I mean, just daily, I bring a bottle in every day just so right next to my desk, I forget to get up and go to the kitchen and get water. I need a bottle there, right? So you got to have that, right? You're already out buying that. Why not buy a bottle where you're investing in a community?
Yes, absolutely. And so with every bottle that you buy from now on, we actually engrave the community's name on the backside of the bottle with the longitude and latitude coordinates. So that way, you know, you're investing into that community. And so when after we sell 1,000 bottles, you can also choose to invest into another community with the next round of 1,000 bottles.
So from a technology perspective, is there a website that I can go to where I can plug in those coordinates and it shows me, or how do I look up?
Yeah, so you can go to Google Maps. You just put in the coordinates. But right now in our development side, we're actually creating an interactive map. It's still in development, but you'll be able to click on the communities, show the pictures, case study, everything. And then every single month we're going back and making sure that the well is being serviced, getting updates for you as the investor. So it's not like a one-stop shop. Like, we're literally going to give them water for the rest of their lives. We built the first modern well in the Wakizo district of Uganda, possibly all of Uganda. I can't fact check that one for sure. But it's a hole in the ground about 100 feet down. We use a solar powered pump to bring it into a water tank where it's filtered and then dispersed at five like modern faucets like we have in the United States, compared to like just a pump it up and down and the water comes out.
Wow. How does the filtering work? What is the source of the filtering? Like, how does that?
Yeah. So it's like more of like kind of how Vibrant Water, Zach, how you had talked with like limestone and coming up through the ground that way, being so far down, it's kind of like a natural.
So it's natural filtering.
Yes.
Oh, even better. So there's no filters they have to replace or any of that kind of stuff. Oh, interesting. Because that could become a logistical issue.
Yes.
If you've got this great well and now you've got to replace these filters, but oh, there's a war or something happening and I can't get these filters. So this is a natural filtration process. That's awesome.
Yes.
Thank you. So everything about the well, there's solar involved, there's natural filtration. I mean, this is all sustainable. Like, there's outside after you build the well.
Yeah.
How long does this thing function?
Yeah. So it'll function, honestly, like forever. The only maintenance that we'll be doing is making sure the solar panels are dusted off every couple of months. And then sometimes the faucets might get loose. We'll have to tighten them up or put on new faucets for like $10.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's not a bad deal.
No.
And people can be a part of this just by buying a bottle.
Yes, just by buying a bottle, you create your own ripple effect. And then there's wow. also the ripple promise that when we partner with these communities, like, we're never going to leave them. It's not drill a well and leave. It's drill a well, we're here supporting you as long as you need it.
That's awesome. See, I think your generation in particular is particularly sensitive to these issues. Like, my generation, I'm Gen X, so I'm 44 right now. So my generation was kind of like at the beginning stages of awareness of our the global situations that happen. And, you know, I think in America, we can be kind of in a bubble, right? And you guys on college campuses, right? You see all these people that are activists for things in America, right? But the things that are problems here are small potatoes compared to what's happening in some of these other places around the world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you got all this energy for things that, in my opinion, may or may not actually be happening. You just want to feel like an activist for something. And if it's not actually happening, then you're wasting your time. Why not put that effort into something that actually is happening, but maybe not in America, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And you're going to Starbucks. You're spending $7, even college students, $7, $5, whatever, at Starbucks. You get a thing of egg bites and a latte, it's $10. You know, you're spending that kind of money.
You do that 3 days a week.
Exactly.
Got a bottle and it's going towards building a well. And that's honestly what you're hitting on right now is exactly what I really challenged Joe on when we first met, which was, you know, how do we take the consumer and actually treat them as they're educated like an investor? Exactly like you were saying in the beginning.
Interesting.
Because I really fundamentally at the beginning of when all of this brand was starting out, because I met Joe at the Entrepreneurship Center at Walsh University, because I came in and was helping them with kind of like a brand redevelopment and helping them get a new site stood up. And then he was listening to kind of some of the things that I was saying. Actually, no, we met before that. You hit me up for a Northwestern Mutual.
Yeah,
like a year prior. He cold called me. He cold called me.
No way. Oh, it was like your college job was a cold call people?
Yeah, it was my internship.
Oh, dude, I had to do cold call surveys from like Wendy's or something when I was in college. It's like the worst. Yeah. In Pittsburgh of all places, like –
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. So then Steeler I show up in there. I love the Steelers.
Oh, no. God.
Yeah. So we showed up. So I showed up in there and I'm like, you know, going through this brand process and we get to talking and he tells me about the Ripple idea and this whole bottle. And I was like, OK, well, how are we going to get buy in, you know, outside of, you know, how are we differentiating ourselves from all these other bottles that are on the market? And the big thing is that a lot of the other bottles that are out there, we really felt when we were first really vetting through this idea is like they're treating the consumer like they're stupid. They're treating the consumer like the only thing that they need to worry about is selling a product. You know, we're going to tell you that, you know, greenwashing their marketing. We're going to tell you that we have this big mission, this overall thing. But then when you really dive down into it, they're donating maybe 1% of their profit, not even their revenue. And so Joe, that's what really started driving Joe crazy right off of the bat. It's like, how do we be honest and actually, and I was really pushing, how do we form a relationship with the consumer? How do we make them feel like they're a part of the process? And that's why every intricate detail that he's talking about, from the longitude and latitude on the back of the bottle, from the transparency bottle on the pricing, from the storytelling that is focused, you know, you go onto our TikTok, you go onto our Instagram, you go onto anything, there's never something that blatantly just shows a product that says buy the product. It's all storytelling. Mm-hmm. It's all, here is what your effort is doing, because the people that are purchasing at this point are so educated online. You know, they understand Google. They understand how to research. They've been around the internet now for 15, 20 years. And so they know where to go to find this information. So I was like, rather than trying to back away, let's put our best foot forward. Let's put the information where they're going to find it. Let's lean into the consumer being educated and invite them to be a part of the party.
Yeah, totally makes sense. Like, I mean, if I'm buying a product and it's considered sustainable, the more interaction I can have with that product and the more you can tie me in from a emotional perspective to that product and what it's doing, its mission, the more I'm going to stay engaged.
Mm. Yes.
And then if this bottle dents and I need a new one, I got another metal bottle, not your bottle, but another metal bottle, dropped it on the concrete. It's dented on the bottom. Now, every time I put it on a table, it's like wobbly, you know? Right. So I'm going to have to go out and get another bottle. Where am I going to go? You guys, I know buying your bottle is going to make an impact. And I followed this journey of this well getting built. I could go on the website, watch a video, a live video, maybe at some point of the people using this well, changing their lives. Why the hell would I go anywhere else?
Thank you. That's been everything I've been trying to build. Is part of the backbone of building this was out of love for other people to give them access to clean water, because I believe it's a fundamental human right. But also, I used to use a Yeti, and then I started looking more into research of Yeti Hydro Flask. They combine for about $1 billion in revenue every year, but they're not really doing a whole lot with the money, to the point where like they're selling a lot of bottles, but there's people on the other side of the world that can't fill their bottles. And that's what's most important to me, is being able to make sure everyone in this world is able to fill a bottle.
So did the people in Uganda, did they also get some of your bottles? Like, or did you drop some of those off to them?
Yeah, this is a funny story. So I had two suitcases, taking them there because I was allowed to take two suitcases for free. One was filled with entirely of Ripple bottles, and the other one was filled with half Ripple bottles and four laptops. And they're not allowed laptops in Uganda. So technically, like, I'm not allowed to bring in outside technology. I'm not sure why.
Wait. They're not allowed to have laptops?
Or if I do, like, it's supposed to be taxed a special way, and like they really like
the government over there just like controls everything.
Yeah, I mean,
the government and the military. It's a completely.
What kind of crazy like fascism do they got happening over there?
Between the government and the churches.
Yeah,
like the church really kind of is battling the government to kind of maintain control over everything. Like, our family has known the Bishop of Gulu for years. His name's Bishop Sabino. And the way that church and the government interacts is just wild, man. And like the government, like he was saying, will block off roads, will tax people unnecessarily to even just go to different places. And one thing that Joe really told me on the way down here, he was like, man, he was like, I can't believe after this trip, one thing that I wasn't expecting to come home with was this massive appreciation for living in the United States. You know, outside of all of the other things that we have, just the freedoms that we have that are capable, and then actually being able to see more of like whether those freedoms are being infringed upon or, you know, that are starting to be noticed, because going over there, you just realize that it's not the same everywhere else.
Well, being in the crypto space so long too, you know, one of the things we wanted to discuss, we were playing around with different ideas on how to use blockchain in real estate. And one of those things is blockchain-based land titles. Mm. And one of the big problems in Africa, in certain parts of Africa, is nobody wants to go and invest in Africa. Like if I'm Hilton Hotels, I don't want to go in there and build a resort.
Right.
Because there is no land title. Like there's no proof really of land title. Yep. It's like one guy from a village saying, okay, or from some tribe, he said, our ancestors have owned from that rock to that tree, right? There is no like set surveying and land titles. So this is one thing that has kept investment, global investment, from coming into Africa. But if you had something like a blockchain land title service that was immutable, and these government officials couldn't go in there and forge documents or, you know, falsify things, and you knew, hey, there was a blockchain record that from that rock to that tree, the so-and-so tribe has owned, that's their land, right?
That's beautiful. Yeah.
That's what they need.
There's a lot of people that don't think about, you know, there's constant, I hear, why aren't people investing in third world countries? Why isn't this? It's because the infrastructure isn't there. Like you said, the investors, they're focused on an ROI. They want to know that like there is a return on investment in the community, that the community is going to benefit, and not just a return on investment to their pockets, but there's what's the point in building something if it's going to be seized and then the community can't even use it.
Yeah, I'm gonna spend $100 million to build something and then guys come in with guns one day and clear all my employees out, and
exactly.
Now it's the, you know, the warlord of whoever's like palace, you know?
Yeah, that's a very realistic possibility.
It's just wild, man. How long were you over there?
I was on the ground for about 8 days.
Wow.
Yeah, it was powerful.
So it took a whole day pretty much to get there, right?
20-hour flight there, 26-hour flight back.
Goodness gracious.
Five different countries, five airports.
Five different countries. So what's the path you took?
On the way there, I went Cleveland to Chicago, Chicago to Brussels, Brussels to Rwanda, Rwanda to Uganda. And then on the way back, I went Uganda to Brussels, Brussels to Frankfurt, Germany, Germany to Canada, Canada to Cleveland.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, I was that was the most nervous part I really had, was making sure I didn't miss a flight, because I struggled with like the language barriers in those European countries. Like, they tried their best, but there's definitely moments where like we were using hand signals to try and communicate back and forth.
Craziness, man. Yeah, this is just wild stuff. And I think, I don't know if it's, and I don't want to make this like a political thing, but I feel like a lot of Americans are entitled.
Amen.
Yes.
Like super entitled. We just don't have any perspective. And it's crazy to me, because like your generation is this like gamer generation where you get online and you're playing games with people from all over the world. But I don't know if anyone's interacting like, hey, this is what's happening. Hey, I got to get off the game because there's a guy with a machine gun at my front door. I got to go.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I kid you not. Like when I was over there, like I lived third world poverty for 8 days straight. It's not like I was in the Marriott in the capital. Like I was in a 2-bedroom apartment that had 4 chairs that were worse than the ones we're sitting in here. Mm-hmm. And I had a foam mattress pad in the corner. That was it. I ate maybe meat 4 days out of the 8 that I was there. And the days that I ate meat was like, I could see it hanging in the sun with flies all around the meat, like in a butcher shop on the corner. It was like sliced off and put in a stew. But even then, like, have you ever skinned a deer? Like,
I've seen a deer skin. Yeah.
So like the white film that like is on the, when you skin it back.
Yeah. The fat. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So you could see it on the cow. And then when they would cook it, they would just like boil the meat and like it would have a slimy white film that was around it after you skinned it. And like the one time my beef had like a cow artery, like the white tube, like going through the middle of it. I was so hungry and needed meat so bad. My body needed it. I just like chomped a little bit and then just swallowed it. And I was like, oh,
it's like, to get it down. It's like when I eat oysters.
Oh, it's like my grandma's cooking in Slovakia. And like on the entitled piece, I feel like super, super blessed. My mom is a first generation immigrant from Slovakia.
Yeah.
And so like I just went back and visited them 2 years ago. And my grandfather remembers after the Soviets left, and they were still on the barter system after the Soviets left. There was no infrastructure. They had no currency. You know, after the war, it was just a free for all. He was like, if you didn't know how to cook, if you didn't know how to make shoes, you didn't have shoes. If you didn't know how to garden, you didn't have food. And it was wild to me listening to him talk about that, because I'm like, I'm sitting here talking to this, but we were not that far removed from this.
No. Mm-hmm.
And that level of perspective that, you know, even the poorest person in the United States is in like the top 10%.
Oh, globally. you're not even poor in the world. Like you're wealthy.
Yeah. And knowing
you got one of these, you're wealthy.
To be the ability to communicate.
Yeah. You can walk into any store and just get something to eat. Like even if it's a quarter cake, you know, you can at least walk in and get that. Right. I mean, it's just crazy. Like in the you know, entitlement programs that we have here. I mean, there's really no reason. This is the whole reason we got the podcast, is to show people there's tons of ways to make money. I mean, it's insane. I'm renting my freaking car on Turo right now. I made $5,600 last month.
Yeah.
Wow. Or in 3 months, just renting a Turo. Like it's easier to get a car loan than a house loan. Oh, you can't get a house loan? Get a freaking car loan. Put it on Turo. It's like you'll make more money off of that thing. You'll get a free car. And it'll be like renting an apartment. Like it's like an Airbnb. You make more money off a damn car than you do off an Airbnb.
Yeah.
It's nuts. And it's just putting the information out there.
Yep.
And you know, we grew up in poverty, like what you were saying, like about as poor as you can get in America. Yep. I mean, we had freaking mushrooms growing out of our carpet in our because this hillbilly upstairs had a washing machine in the dining room because he didn't want to pay the 50 cents to wash in the community laundromat. And so water's coming down. We're in the basement. So it's just a slab of concrete on top of dirt. Mushrooms growing out of our carpet. It was crazy. It was like we had a little forest in our living room, in our dining room.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was nuts. And it was just like, snakes coming in and stuff from outside. And I mean, we were pretty poor, right? And my dad, drug addict, alcoholic, running off. He was into witchcraft and all kinds of crazy shit and like hippie and just never around, didn't pay child support. So somehow we survived on $9,000 a year. I don't know how that worked, but we did. Crackers and peanut butter. A lot of crackers, peanut butter, and ramen. So it was like being in college, but for 18 years of my life, right? Yeah. And, you know, I mean, you try and it was back, you know, 80s, mostly 80s and 90s when like poverty was freaking poverty in America. Like it's like there's so much stuff out there now for people here in America. Like even the poor people aren't poor. Like even if you're on food stamps and welfare, you got housing and you got food every day. Like I got some tenants, I got a tenant that was getting $1,600 a month in food stamps with three kids. One of them was a baby.
Wow.
And had her boyfriend living there. He wasn't even supposed to be living there. Because she was on Section 8, but he was living there working under the table doing construction. So they had plenty of money coming in. Mm-hmm. And then they were bootlegging CDs out of the house back when DVDs and CDs were cool. Like they were bootlegging those out of the house. So they were making side hustle money, right? And you got a lot of people that are just industrious and know how to make money and know how to work a system and things like that. But in these other countries, you don't have any of those fallback.
They don't. And to your point, so like something that I found really, really interesting just thinking about Uganda in general. There was a gentleman that came to Walsh where we went to school, because I also graduated from Walsh. His name was Robinson Oteem, right? And he came and he said, Jan, he's like, the biggest issue is people are constantly sending resources to Uganda, but nobody's teaching anybody how to facilitate their own resources or build their own economy, right? He said that now, after the wars and everything kind of happened, everybody was put in these internment camps. And so you have this entire generation of kids that their version of reality is so narrow that they grew up, mom and dad would walk outside of the tent, they would get food from the truck, they would come back into the tent, and that was their reality for their first 18 years of life.
Jeez.
And so now he's battling, and part of what my company's been doing with him is we are working with him to try to stand up an academy there.
Oh, that'd
be
awesome.
To help teach entrepreneurship and other skills like that. And he's so passionate about it because he was like, they don't even know. They don't even know what reality could be outside of relying on somebody else to provide for them. They don't know that they could go out and pick bananas and sell them at a market. That it's never even crossed their mind.
Think of all that wasted talent.
I think that's also transferable, that story here to the United States, with people who work 9-to-5s and don't realize the power of side hustles to be able to create income and freedom of time.
Preach.
Dude, so I'm in this like Catholic business owners group, and we had a lady come in, created this light, this LED light, this it's a Watts of Love is what it's called. Watts of Love. And it's a solar powered light. So she goes to these remote islands in the Philippines where there's these villagers, right? And the problem is, as soon as lights go out, they can't produce things for the market. Mm-hmm. So the women, they make things and they take them to the market. But once it gets dark, they can't see to make these products. So she brings them these lights and they hang them in their little tents or wherever, their shacks that they live in, and they have light. And they became crazy productive. And now they've got more stuff. They're making more money, and their villages and stuff are starting to grow.
It's so simple.
Because of one thing.
So simple.
Yeah. And we can, we have an opportunity now to kind of go out with a group from the organization I'm in, and go to the Philippines and actually see the impact, sort of the way you did with the Uganda thing. So, I mean, it's just, people don't understand. It's like one little piece of technology like that can just change in lives. The same thing with this well. So like, what does the well, what have you seen? What kind of improvements in these people's lives outside of not drinking filthy water anymore? What are, or not drinking water at all?
Yeah.
What are some of the improvements you see in these people's lives?
Well, immediately it's the fact that they're not walking about 5 kilometers to the jungle, but off the top of my head and exactly what they've told me is it's really sad, to be honest. When these kids go alone into the jungles, there's these guys who ride around on motorcycles. They're called Boda Bodas. Well, sometimes people, there's some not so great people in the world, and they wait in the jungle for these kids to walk by, and they get raped, to be honest.
Kidnapped. Or kidnapped.
Yeah. Well, that was another big problem.
Military child soldiers. Yeah.
Yeah. It was knowing that our well is on in the center of a village on a main road. So these children are not going to have to walk through the middle of a jungle, not only for predators as in other human beings want to take advantage of them, but also like during the dry season, vipers, king cobras. Like when these children get bit out in the jungle, they die.
Yeah.
Like,
they
can't
small.
Get to a hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck, man. Wow. That's crazy. That's rough.
I don't even know if I can tell the story, but there was a child. I was looking at where they were getting their water at now for the next well, Kazuzo. He came up and filled his like laundry detergent like cup with water, and he was carrying a bike tire, and the bike tire had a hole in it. And so he filled up his jug, and then he filled up the bike tire, and he drank from a dirty bike tire as his cup. And I just stood there, and he didn't talk to us. He just got his stuff and left. But I just stood there, and like I was speechless. I really didn't know what to say. Like I just watched a kid drink out of a dirty bike tire.
Yeah, and you got to do what you got to do. Like I mean, these kids, that's normal to them because they got to do what they got to do. And we talked a little bit earlier about like crypto and things like this, and the value of it. And in America, Jamie Dimon just came out and said Bitcoin's worthless again. I mean, he's been saying that since 2014, and it's up like 14,000% or something since he said that first. Well, he just came out again and said it. It's like, dude, how many times are you going to double down on this? And to him, Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan, one of the biggest, most predatory banks in the world, is the one who's going to tell everybody else that Bitcoin's worthless. But now if you're living in a country where you're trading cell phones as currency because they have data on them, Bitcoin becomes pretty freaking valuable.
Well, that was my thing is like I've dabbled in cryptocurrencies and stuff, but I noticed out in the third world country, like trading shillings for dollars and dollars for euros and airport, like the Bitcoin, Ethereum, like all of that, it's going to be huge for international.
There is no exchange rate. I mean, there's some arbitrage, but at the same time, it's like a Bitcoin's a Bitcoin, right? It doesn't matter where you're at. A Bitcoin's a Bitcoin.
From my experience, it's going to be very useful, like for international
trade.
But
on the realm of technology, go back to you were telling the story about the computers earlier. Go on and keep finishing that one.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host, Matt Heslin, brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Oh, yeah. So I was bringing the luggages in, and so I got stopped by security when they scanned my bags, and like they wanted me to open them and stuff. And so while we were talking, I was acting like I didn't understand them because they were trying to speak English, not very well. But like I switched my two luggage bags while they were talking and opened the one that didn't have the bottles and like the laptops in it. And they're like, oh, okay, like, go ahead, pack your bags up. But, like, I could have very easily, like, been detained for trying to bring in, like, laptops.
Oh, my gosh. That's just crazy, dude.
But
I remember one time.
Quick think on your feet.
Yeah.
I was a smuggler.
Went into, like, adrenaline mode, and I was like, oh, fuck. I just landed here. I'm about to be detained.
Yeah. I mean, you've probably heard stories. Like, I grew up a lot of times with my grandma because we kept getting evicted. So I'd, like, be in, you know, we'd be in a little one bedroom with my grandma. My grandma grew up in the Depression. And she used to tell us stories, like, making 30 cents an hour at the Thai factory and, you know, making $5 a week cooking for the nuns. And then my mom and her brother, they'd go down to the river and they'd pick poke, which is, like, just greens that grow by the river. And they'd boil those and just eat those. Like, all summer, she said they ate poke. And I don't even know if my Uncle Tommy remembers it. Last time I talked to him, he said, I don't remember any of that stuff. And I'm like, well, my mom was a little older than he was. I think 6 years older than he was. So she might have had a more, like, lucid, you know, memory.
A bit more conscious at that time.
A bit more conscious of what was happening back then. But, you know, when they told us that stuff, we didn't feel poor anymore, right? We weren't going down to the river and picking grass and eating that, pretty much.
It's perspective. And that's kind of what we were talking about earlier. And it makes it, I know you use the word humbling. But so damn grateful, I think, for what we have, right?
Yeah. I mean, even our minimum wage here in the United States, like, I know the cost of living is different, but it's really not that different cost of living wise. There was a sign posted on, like, a telephone pole there. Mm-hmm. It said part-time job Monday through Friday. They were working 9 hours a day. They were making less than $1 an hour.
Just crazy, man. I went to, we went to, after we got married, we got married in Rome and we went to Asia afterwards and we go to Asia and we're bouncing around. We're in Phuket and we're thinking, oh, we're in Thailand. This is cool. Like, let's go to the beach. And we weren't far from the beach. We leave our hotel. There's this, like, strip of restaurants and there was a couple of massage parlors. My wife, she owns a spa. So she was like, I'm going to check out one of these Thai massages. Like, let's go in. We go in and our massage for both of us was $4.
What?
Yes. And then we tipped them. Double that, obviously, right? Yeah. We're like, here's another $4. And they freaked out. They were like, oh my God, $4. Like, I'm like, wait, I didn't realize it was that different.
Yeah, the disparity is wild. Mm-hmm. And I think what's if anybody's that's listening to this podcast needs to take anything out of it outside of Joe's story and everything else, it's just understanding the disparity and taking this in and do some research. Like, look at the exchange rate in some of these other countries and then look at what it costs and how much impact you could actually have with a dollar. Because everybody's focusing right now on, like, your gas prices are up and the dollar's inflating. Everybody's angry about everything because a loaf of bread costs a little bit more. And okay, A, you do have the opportunity to find a side hustle, make a little bit more money to, you know, keep yourself stable in the lifestyle that you got moving. But there's people on the other side of the world that, to your point, you know, you tip them what you would assume is, like, the, you know, a couple of bucks out of your wallet, is no skin off of your nose, is life changing. That entire day has now been made.
They completely changed their month.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, that $4 tip. I mean, we felt bad afterwards. We were like, man, it was only $4. Like, we literally went back that evening, got more massages and tipped them even more. And then they were like, holy shit. Like, I was like, I felt bad. I was like, damn, they just worked on our backs for like an hour for $2 each, you know, like, let's go back and give them like an American tip, you know?
Right.
And it was crazy to me. But then also people don't understand how every other currency is pretty much tied to the US dollar because the oil, like, oil is pegged to the US dollar, right? It's priced in US dollars. So anything anybody wants to do in the rest of the world, they have to purchase oil in US dollars. So their currency in a way is tied to the US dollar, right? So when we print more money, it affects us in small ways, right? I mean, relative, right?
Relatively small.
So, you know, gas goes from $3 to $4 or, you know, a gallon of milk goes from $2 to $2.50, whatever it is, right?
Right.
But go to Argentina, who they are wildly affected. So when we do things like print money, our dollar, it looks like our dollar is just flat, right? When actually the dollar, because of inflation, is actually going down. But because everyone else's currency is relative to our currency, their currency looks like it's going way down, right? So, you know, before the quantitative, before all this printing of money and everything else, like, the dollar is now worth about 85 cents of what it was before all of this money printing, before COVID, right? So if you think of that, but everybody else is doing the exact same thing, they're debasing their currency at the same time we are, it looks like a dollar's worth a dollar.
It almost speaks, though, like, the negative effects that our decisions can have on people on the other side of the world.
But we don't care.
It also shows, you know, the positive effects that our same decisions can have, which is exactly what Joe is trying to leverage here.
Yep.
Right? Yep. Yeah, one bottle has a huge effect.
You're giving people an opportunity to not be assholes.
Well, that's exactly what it is. It's like every single decision you have has a ripple effect. Like,
yeah.
Like you choose whether or not you have a positive or a negative ripple effect with the action that you decide to have.
I love it. And the name's Ripple.
Yes.
So is this the thing? Is it the ripple effect?
The ripple effect. Yeah.
Oh, ripple. Water ripple and the ripple effect. Oh,
there's
smart.
There's a lot of late night.
Is this part of this branding stuff?
I have an 8-foot whiteboard in my apartment that I installed because I just like when I have hardcore ADHD and I'm unmedicated. So like I just if I lock into a hyper,
I feel like it's
mode,
a power.
It is. It's a superpower.
Dude,
that's
I'm like, I need this ADHD.
Right,
why would I get on Ritalin when I need this shit? Like, this is good for me.
Yeah, that's what I'm advocating for right now on my platform. I'm working with a bunch of independents, helping them transition from their careers, translate their skills into independent consulting, and then helping them scale their businesses. Right. And so one of the things that we started doing with Joe when we and him first met is he was like, okay, how do we do this? I was like, all right, you're going to come to the apartment. I'm going to turn all of the lights green because I have Philips Hues in my apartment. And we're going to sit here. I'm going to ask you some questions and we're just going to fill out this whiteboard.
Mm.
And that was one of the phrases that ended up coming out is just like, you know, there's all of these different things, the ripple effect. How do we get people to really understand? Because we're not selling a bottle. That, and what it comes down to is
you're not selling a solution to a world global problem.
Yeah. We're selling, like, coming from the Air Force, I spent 7 years in the Air National Guard and I loved that uniform, not because of the uniform, but because I got to wear U.S. Air Force and my name on my chest.
Facts.
You know, I loved that movement. I was a part of something bigger than myself. I knew exactly where that was going to go. And I was proud of that flag.
Mm-hmm.
Not was, am.
It's more than just a bottle.
It is. Yeah. It's a movement. Joe started in his mind, was laying there, you know, and I let him tell that portion of like how it kind of hit his mind, but was laying there and was like, how do we impact the world? How can I solve a problem with a movement and actually give people, because it's powerful when you realize internally that you're having a positive impact on the world, it drives you to be a better person in all other areas of your life.
Yep.
You know, it's not just the bottle at that point. It's now, hey, I purchased this bottle. Wow, I'm a good person. What would a good person do? I'm going to buy that, you know, the next person in line at Starbucks, a coffee, because I'm a good person.
In a way,
you start to talk to yourself
guilt.
Like that.
Like there's this guilt that everybody has. Yeah. Like, you know, when you realize, oh, we live in this first world country, it's the richest country in the world. You know, there's this thing, right? And everybody wants to be good. I think that's why you have so many people like virtue signaling on Facebook right now. Like people like, look what I did. I put a black square on my profile picture. I'm a good person, right? Like, okay, that's cool.
Instagram is the king of that.
Yeah. Oh, Insta. Yeah. All that shit. Right. And, you know, you got all these people preaching it. They're 15 years old and they're preaching it grown people about how they should think about the world. Right.
With ideological perspective.
But what are they doing? Right.
That's the whole thing. It's like you have to execute.
Execute. Exactly. Like you're virtue signaling on Facebook to other people who are virtue signaling on Facebook. All you're doing is a circle jerk. Like it's just a big circle jerk. A virtue signaling, right?
A giant virtual
circle jerk. Yeah, dude. You're just like,
you could be the most intellectual person in the world, but unless you're executing, it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah, good for you. You got all these ideas.
Yeah.
And you told other people who aren't going to execute either.
Yep.
Yeah. Put your money where your mouth is.
We were just talking about this on the drive down here. It's like when two intellectual people get into a lock, right? And I always say that, like, my dad used to tell me all the time when I was a kid, because he started out like working as a dietary guy at a hospital and then was like one of the first 400 people to get his respiratory therapy license and then started his own company and everything. And he used to tell me as a kid, he was like, Jan, he was like, there's two different people in this world. He was like, there's the people that are speakers, they're talkers, they're going to constantly criticize the people that are in the arena. But then there's the people that are in the arena. And then those people split into two. You either are a person that goes out and earns an MBA or you can hire MBAs.
Mm.
And he was like, be the person that's willing to get into the arena, because it's a lot easier to criticize a boxer when you're not getting punched in the face.
Exactly. Yep.
He's like, get into the arena, be willing to take a couple of right hooks, and then you'll slowly learn to bob and weave. You'll get better at it. But you have to be willing to step into that space and not just talk shit.
Oh, there's a lot of guys right now that think they're Zach Taylor, like the head coach of the Bengals. They're like, oh, well, Zach needs to get fired. It's like, who are you, dude?
Yeah,
you work at Amazon. Like, you pack fucking crates all day. Like, and you're criticizing a guy that's committed his life to the NFL or committed his life to football. Like, but that's people, right? That's just human beings. It's human nature to criticize and second guess and, you know, play the devil's advocate, I think. I mean, people are doing that. But how excited are you that the catcher for the Cleveland Indians is Yan Gomes?
Oh yeah.
Wasn't that cool? Like
I use that. So like,
you're like another yawn.
When I was working as a nurse all the time, my friends would get so tired of hearing my intro spiel, right? Cause it's spelled like Jan.
Yeah.
Right. J-A-N. Mm-hmm. And then, so I would walk in and be like, hi, my name's Jan. Looks like Jan, pronounced like Jan Gomes.
Yeah. And that's
and
what,
then like everybody, yeah. cause I was working at a hospital in Canton, Ohio. Everybody is like, yep, I understand what's going on. I know exactly what you're saying. And then I get the old ladies like, ha 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 ha. And then they were my friends for the rest of the shift. And it was like the perfect introduction.
Your parents came from Slovakia?
Yeah. My mom immigrated here in the 90s. Okay. And then my dad is actually second generation US. So he actually is, if you trace our bloodlines back, I'm 100% Kraut and Kobasi. Both
wow.
sides.
Wow.
And so my dad's family is from a region called Spiš. And then my mom's family is from a region called Košice. But I feel so blessed to have immigrant mentality.
No, dude, I tell people all the time, amazing. I want to trade like people that have been here forever, like trade their asses. Like they don't appreciate America. No, when I'm the emperor of America, which is going to happen one of these days, I've got two things I'm going to do. There's the trade rule where you get 5 years after you turn 18, you get 5 years to get your shit together. Like go to college, go to the military, go to a trade school, do something.
But I think everybody should have to go through boot.
Yeah. 2 years. Like the Koreans, right?
Yep.
But if you can't get your shit together, we go to Uganda and we find that kid that's drinking out of a tire. Yeah. And we trade your hillbilly ass for this dude who's drinking out of a tire, and then he comes here and builds a huge tech company or whatever.
He's hustling.
The next, like, even you know, solar bike company like, or whatever.
He's going to do something. He's going to make the most of it.
He's going to appreciate what he has. He's going to appreciate it, right? Mm-hmm. And look at all the, like, Jeff Bezos, son of Syrian immigrants. Elon Musk,
yeah.
Immigrant. What's his name? Steve Jobs, son of Syrian immigrant.
Immigrants with ADHD.
Yeah, exactly.
The majority of those top level people that are, you know,
dude, like Elon's
when
got autism.
Thinking about the think different
he's
campaign.
Autistic. Yeah.
You know, it's those who are crazy enough to think that they could believe that they're going to change the world are the ones that do it. I mean, Steve, like that is immigrant mentality mixed with ADHD. That's hyper focus, being able to take in a whole bunch of inputs and creatively combine two things that previously were in silos and be like, huh. I bet you if we put those two things together, that'd be pretty badass.
Yeah. Dude, there just needs to be a churning of America. Like, yeah. It, you know, this is the place where everything's invented. Everything's done. All the hard workers, hustlers, they come here. We just trade the turds for the hustlers. And then like the turds, like their kids become hustlers when they move to another country. Yeah. And then we bring them back to America and we just churn it. Right.
There's like a quote.
Oh yeah. About soft people.
Yeah. The like, hard men, weak, oh, or hard yeah. times,
hard crimes create
weak, or no good weak, times create.
Yeah.
I forget how exactly it goes.
Yeah, it's long.
Good. No. Tough good men, create weak tough men. Men create good times. Good times create weak men. Weak men create hard times.
And hard times create.
And then it cycles over again. Yeah. It's like hard times create strong men. And so I was actually talking to somebody not too long ago. I was like, listen, guys, I don't think you understand the opportunity that we're in. Because everybody was bitching about how COVID sucks and everything. I was a full-time ICU nurse at the beginning of 2020. I left ICU trauma nursing, started a marketing branding firm, scaled it to 6 employees during COVID. Mm-hmm. You know, because I viewed it as an opportunity. I was like, okay, all these people are going to be closing their doors. They're going to have to make money somehow. They're going to have to get their voices out somehow. So I ran around our city, literally just handing out playbooks. I was like, here's how we do what we're doing. You know, I have a podcast that is scaled to, I think we're at like 40 or 50,000 total listens at this point.
Nice, man.
But like, I would run around and just like handing stuff out. And the whole reason why I did that is because I knew that people were going to need that. You know, they're going to need that assistance. You're going to have to try to figure out how to survive. Yeah. But now I went back and I looked and I love history, right? That's one of my squirrel moments. Just dive down into it. You look at the bubonic plague, Renaissance, right? Flu of 1918, roaring 20s.
Mm-hmm.
COVID-19.
What's coming after that?
Strong people.
As long as the government doesn't ruin our shit.
Yeah, and you know, during the Renaissance, the government flooded us with money.
Like during World War II, I mean, we were the only country left that could build anything.
Right.
And here we come. Boom. All this stuff. I mean, it's one of the reasons Scandinavian countries are doing well. Mm-hmm. Because Scandinavian countries were the only ones left that weren't bombed after World War II.
Right.
And they sold iron ore to both sides. And they only had, what, maybe 4 million people living in, like, Norway or something at the time. And then after that, of course they got social programs. They could pay for healthcare and school and all this other stuff because they had so much money and not that many people.
Right.
In America, you know, during World War II, you know, here we are, created this huge industrial complex and had to create equipment that makes new equipment. And Europe needed to get rebuilt. You know, parts of Asia had to get rebuilt.
Right.
Africa, parts of Africa had to get rebuilt. So here we come with everything, which made us a superpower, made us the only superpower that was left.
Right.
You know? And it's crazy. Like, I go to places in, I've been to, you know, Ukraine, Kiev. I've been to,
Ukraine's a wild place.
Croatia. And talking to some of the people, in Croatia, still a lot of like socialism and stuff going on in Croatia. My buddy's from Romania. He actually said the Russians were worse than the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
He said the Germans.
My grandparents would agree.
Yeah. He said that the Germans had class.
Yep.
And the Russians were just animals. And he said that when the Germans came through Romania and they took over Romania, the officers and the soldiers, you would have to feed them. So his grandma his grandma used to actually, they'd come in, they'd sit down, they'd take their hat off, they'd be in uniform for dinner, they'd sit down and she would make them a meal, right? And he's literally got spoons and stuff with like swastikas on them.
Yeah.
From what they left because they had their own silverware.
Yep.
And then when the Russians came in, they were just animals. They just took over, pillaging, raping, you know, whatever. Horrible. It was bad.
Horrible. My great grandfather spent a decade in a Soviet prison.
Oh, the gulag.
Yep. He spent a decade in a Soviet prison because he was the mayor of our village and he was Catholic.
Oh, boy.
And wow. he would not renounce his religion. He would not renounce his title for the city. And that's, I'm like, when I gave a speech when I graduated from Walsh, somebody paid somebody off and I got to give the commencement address. I'm still trying to figure out how that happened. But one of the things that I said is like, that's my bloodline.
Yeah.
You know, that's the type of conviction that they had. And that's the same type of thing me and Joe talk about. It's just like once you attach to that idea and you know where your moral standing is and you know where your line is in the sand, you don't let people cross that. Even if it comes down to you spending a decade in a Soviet.
Well, and they had to put him in prison because if they would have killed him, they would have just martyred him.
Yep.
Exactly. And he would have ignited something.
Exactly.
Do you know a third of the gold in the world that's in the world right now was mined in the gulags under Joseph Stalin?
I did not know that.
Yep. Yep. If you were a dissenter or if he even just pointed at you and said, he's a dissenter. Hey, yeah. We need more people because people keep dying mining gold in our gulags. He just came up with reasons. He actually would Photoshop, before Photoshop, he would have people taken out of photos with him that they sent off to camps that would be part of his
regime. Yeah. Everybody needs to read Dostoevsky.
It was a great Photoshop job. Like before Photoshop, I was like, how did they do that? It was amazing.
You have chances. If you're listening to this and you've never heard of Dostoevsky, you need to read some of his work and understand what exactly that Stalinist regime.
People want that stuff. People want that here, believe it or not, because they don't know history.
Yeah.
This is the problem. They don't understand.
What happens when freedom of speech is completely.
When freedom of speech is gone, you start slowly giving away your rights.
Yep.
And you need people to stand up against these kinds of things when they first peek their ugly heads. And, you know, people can call you whatever, but you're the front line of this kind of stuff.
Mm.
And people got to realize that, you know, we live in the freest, safest, most equitable country that's ever existed on the face of the earth.
Not just country, but the time that we live in right now is so incredible. Like we talked about earlier, anyone can start during a pandemic two incredible companies that can still grow and scale in the middle of a pandemic where no one can work.
I mean, you got three college kids here who are literally building wells right now in a country that you just stepped into for the first time, it sounds like, right?
Yes.
You haven't even been there yet.
No, I love living in the internet age. I'm so thankful to have the internet in my lifetime because without it, I wouldn't be able to communicate with manufacturers in a different country.
I was
going to
say, dude, talk about how you first got the bottles.
Yeah. So
like, this is the ballsiest. This is when I really like latched onto this kid because I was like, that was ballsy as fuck. This move.
So to get the bottles, I wanted a high quality bottle. So I backtraced the manufacturers of Hydro Flask and Yeti because I like their bottles. What I found was a manufacturer in Hangzhou City, China. So I emailed back and forth maybe 5-10 times asking about the bottles, colors, getting designs and stuff like that. And then I sent over my whole college savings with the idea that 2000 bottles would show up in a couple of months and I'd be able to sell them and build a well.
Jeez.
I met him right after he sent that over.
And you had to put your trust in a Chinese manufacturer.
Yeah, and I only emailed like 5 times. Not even talked on the phone.
Wow. And this was during COVID?
Yeah.
With like supply chains completely down.
Yeah.
Looking back on it now, I'm like, wow,
don't get me wrong. Like your
balls
podcast,
to the wall. Like
your podcast earlier that said like the book, Don't Be Dumb.
Yeah.
That was probably a dumb move on my behalf, but like, it worked.
I mean, if you were working, this is the thing. If you were working for a business, right?
Yeah.
no way you would have been able to pull that move.
Oh, fuck no.
And this is why, this is why, like, people talk all this stuff. Like, you know, there's a lot of businesses here. We could probably have more unicorn startups here if it wasn't for so many acqui-hires. Because we got P&G here, we got Kroger, we got Cintas. We got, like, so many Fortune 500 companies here. And not only Fortune 500, we got a ton of Fortune 1000s. So if they see a technology and a team of people that they're like, wow, this is a smart group of guys. They acquihire them and bring them in and then put them in this corporate structure where they can't make moves like you just did. There's no way purchasing would approve what you just said. Hey, I talked to this dude on the phone a few times. Like, I didn't even talk to him. I just sent him some emails. Is it cool if we just buy these things? Who is the dude? Like, what's his track record? Do we have a purchase order? Like, do we have a is he a vendor? Is he like an approved? No, he's just some dude. Like,
it could have been a random Chinese website that somebody built to take my money.
Yeah,
I didn't know.
Yeah,
but I mean, at the end of the day, like, I'm 20 years old. If I send over this $14,000 and it's all gone, oh no, I start over. Like,
it's amazing that you had $14,000 saved up. Like, I worked two summers at Kings Island and I saved $2,000.
No, a lot of other people like me that actually invested when he was working Northwestern Mutual.
Nice.
Well, I mean, like, ever since I was a little kid, like, it was always side hustles. It was lemonade stands. It was mowing grass. It was shoveling, like, driveways in the wintertime. And for some reason, I could never get myself to spend a single penny.
Good for you.
Like a penny pincher.
I still live in the hood. I don't have to live in the hood. I move wherever the fuck I want right now, but I like the hood. Like, I like being cheap. Like, I actually, it's like a competition for me to see how cheap I can be.
I honestly, man, I feel like living in those areas, like, I live right smack dab in the middle of downtown Canton. Right. And like, so like, my area is not bad, but like, you go 5 blocks to the west or 5 blocks to the east, it's like, but the majority of the people are so down to earth. Like, I've gone to, like, there's an area up in Canton called Jackson Township, right? And that's like where there's like 4 country clubs in that area. It's where all the money is, right? I hate those people. You know, there's a couple of you guys that are from Jackson that are going to listen to this. I love you guys, but you guys are exceptions. The majority of those people, though, like, I graduated with less than 100 kids. He graduated with even less than that. Our towns are literally, his is a village. Mine's a town, so I might at least got him beat. But grew up complete, like, really, really rural, was in 4-H, raised all of our own food, raised my own animals and everything. And it's like, that type of people, those are the people that'll show up and help you bale 500 bales.
Yeah. Which, you know, is the worst thing you could do during the summer is bale freaking hay.
Those are the types of people that'll show up when your car breaks down at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
and don't know how to fix it.
Exactly.
Well, that's what happened with me. Like, I was getting ready to drive to the airport this one time, and my car literally just broke down. And I was like, Jan, I need help fixing this. And we try and work on it real quick, but I had to get up to the airport, so he just drove me, and we fixed it later. But
yeah, don't call AAA. Call the people 4-H.
Yeah.
somebody will know.
Your serpentine belt fell off, man. We just need this part and fix up the pulley and make sure that your tensioner is all good. And
yeah, by the way, I just picked these peaches here.
I'm going to feed you, too.
Yeah, so the saying is, hard times create strong men. Strong men create good times. Good times create weak men. Weak men create hard times.
Preach.
Yeah.
That's facts, dude. I mean, that's real deal right there.
Where would you say we are right now?
I think we're in good times. I mean, we're in excellent times right now.
Yeah.
I mean, this is unbelievable. You don't even need a job anymore. Like, a real job. You could do Uber, like my Uber driver from the airport the other day. I literally dropped my Turo off to a lady at the airport, and she drove it around for 3 days, made $500. She drove around for 3 days, made $500, right? And so I'm coming back from the airport. Guys from my neighborhood that's driving the Uber, my original neighborhood that I'm from, Price Hill. And I say to the guy, oh, you know, where are you from? We get in a conversation. He's talking about driving Uber and how much money he makes. And I'm like, dude, I'm like, when you don't drive Uber, like, you could just put it on Turo and make money and not even have to drive. They're driving your car. And he's like, I didn't know about that. So I'm just like letting him know. So now this dude, like, when he's sitting at home and he doesn't feel like driving his car, he can just put it on Turo and somebody comes pick it up and make money that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I said, look, whenever your car is not rented, just drive and just have it on there all the time. And if somebody rents it, he's actually going to make more money renting it on Turo than he would being an Uber driver, right?
And that'll be great for his mental health. That'll be great for everything. It'll give him a break, be able to gain some perspective. So that's really cool. I mean,
but the dude's making $40,000 a year driving Uber, you know, like, and he's delivering things at the same time. It's like, you don't even need a degree. You just need a car.
That's why we can't have nice things.
And you drive around.
Jesus.
You're good. Just spin that sucker around there. But. Oh, wait, I think it's this one. Okay, you're good.
There we go.
So, yeah. So just drive Uber and, like, you know, you can, dude, there's so much. You could DoorDash.
I know so many entrepreneurs that DoorDash, and he's one of the, our content guy, Jarrett. That's what he does. Yeah. Just DoorDashes in the evenings.
Well, that's what you were talking about earlier. Like, we've had people on the podcast that are started out cutting a couple grasses around their neighborhood. Then they started clearing driveways with the snow. And we don't even get snow in Cincinnati that much anymore. But, like, clearing driveways, grass, all that other stuff. I mean, the dude's making good money. Hiring people, scaling it up, yep. like, all that stuff. I mean, it's amazing, like, what you can do nowadays. I mean, that stuff, like, when I was a kid, it wasn't even an option. But there's so many ways for, like, young people to make money now. It's nuts. But, I mean, and with all of this stuff out here, with all of these opportunities and ways to make money and everything else, you still choose to create a business that's essentially giving a majority of its profits away to help people in a country you just went to for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, it's not about being in a different country. I believe that we're all brothers and sisters on this world. Like, we have to take care of it. There's no, yeah, sure, Bezos and Elon Musk are trying to go to Mars or whatever. But, like, until that happens, like, we really do only have one world. And we're all human beings at the end of the day. So if you don't have access to clean water, I don't know what to say other than I want to help give you clean water. And so we're giving a majority of our profits away right now because, honestly, in the micro, I plan on losing hard. Like, we're not a water bottle company. Anybody that thinks we're a water bottle company, that's not the true vision. Eventually, I see us being like a nonprofit version of Amazon, connecting nonprofits to our products that we brand to the consumers, creating a centralized location so that way consumers can find a product that has an exact purpose and creates a ripple effect in the world. So, like, right now we're going to, like, kind of beta test this at a really low level with, like, shirts and long sleeves and hoodies that are going to help build a school and a vocational school, teaching them skills like tailoring, car mechanics.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And carpentry. So that way that these villages can, like, learn skills to make money to bring them out of poverty. And so we were originally going to do hats and hoodies for hunger and just give them, like, food packets, but that doesn't solve the problem. So we want to educate them. But overall, like, I want, like, hundreds, if not thousands of products that has a direct tie to a purpose somewhere in the world. It can even be in the United States helping solve some of our problems here. But that's what I really envision. And then that'll lead into, like, brick and mortar stores like Walmart. We're like, oh, you want to go buy your groceries here? Like, cool. Like, this backpack during school season is going to be used to help build a school. You buy your strawberries, grapes, I don't know, whatever you buy at the grocery store. And it's going to help for sustainable farming in these nations that need help getting all that going.
Have you ever heard of, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs?
Yep, sure.
So when we really started vetting out that idea, right, I started thinking about it because that's my minor was in clinical psychology. And then my side hustle currently outside of owning the business is I work as a pediatric psych nurse. I work with child behavioral adolescent in downtown with, like, kids in foster care.
Oh, man.
Care.
So you know what's going on with this generation where they're all crazy and stuff.
Like, yeah, it's wild. And a lot of them are crazy, not because of any fault of their own. They're actually really, really, really smart.
Because I'm thinking, like, the super far left people that are, like, ruining the Democratic Party for everyone else.
Yeah.
Like, what is wrong with them?
I wish I could explain.
And you're a clinic, you can't even tell. Bad. Like, you're a clinical psychologist. You don't even know.
I think that they're just possessed by ideology. You know, there's ideologies that are really, really appealing on the surface. But if you dive into them and you read people like, you know, Friedrich Nietzsche, you read Dostoevsky, you read Carl Jung, you listen to somebody like Jordan Peterson talk about psychology and the way that it's manifesting in the world, it starts to get really, really blatant that the ideology is not the answer. You know, it may sound good on paper. It may sound practical to kind of spread this out and be more communistic or fascist. It just doesn't work.
Well, there's a group downtown. They got a candidate running right now for city council. And this is a Democratic Socialist group or whatever. Mm-hmm. And if you go on their Facebook page or their Instagram, they got books by Karl Marx.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, he was such a great thinker. He was such a good person and all this other stuff. And I'm like, what?
And you think there's a something inside of it. So I'm going to hit on Maslow's and then I can maybe appeal to that a little bit. But the whole reason why I think it's so genius, the way that Joe is setting this up, is that if you take that bottom tier of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right, it's like food, shelter, basic human necessities. Mm-hmm. You're never going to be able to make it to any other parts of that pyramid if those are not satisfied.
Exactly.
Right. So what Joe is really able to do and what we've been able to project out as the vision is first step, first 5 years, you know, however long that takes, is satisfy the bottom tier of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Basic human needs. If you can satisfy those, then you can go back to those same villages and move up the pyramid and provide a product or a service that solves the next tier of the pyramid to get them towards that self-actualization and entrepreneurship. Right. But they're never going to be able to think outside of the box and build an economy if they don't have water or food.
But also what you're doing is, so socialism works as long as you have a functional government, right? In the perfect world.
Right.
Yes. Right. What happens if you don't have a functional government?
Right.
What you're doing is you're bringing capitalism in a market economy and teaching people how to create an economy when they don't have a functional government to help support them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I spoke with the politicians in that district just to be able to save face. So that way we can continue to go in and build wells without the red tape. And I was talking, they said that they have about $6,000 to $8,000 a year dedicated to giving these people access to clean water, which barely even drills like one not modern well. And there's like 50, 60 villages in one district. There's 37 in just our sub district that we drilled in. Like, it's not the local, it's like the president's been in office since the 1980s there. And there's no funding coming down to these smaller districts that really need to be the ones that help the people. Us going in and drilling a well for $8,000 was their whole year's budget. And I plan on doing way more than one well a year.
Sounds like some of the politicians in America that have been telling people the same thing over and over again for decades and nothing's changing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's politics. It's politics is politics. Yeah. Anywhere in the world you go, it's a bunch of people promising things, pretending to offer stuff.
Yeah.
But what the guy needs to use with that money is go out and find more people like you, bring them into their country so they can provide these solutions.
Absolutely. And so when I was working over there, my liaison was like, oh, you got to talk with like these government officials. You got to give them a bottle. I said, I'm not giving them a fucking bottle.
No.
Those government leaders are not getting a fucking bottle. I said, you know who's getting a bottle? That kid who drank out of his tire.
Yeah.
Those are the people that are getting a bottle.
Yeah.
So I did not give a single bottle out to the government leaders. They kind of looked at me like and just like, when I was handing them out to the villages that day, like they kind of expected one. I just kept on looking away. I was like, look, these are your people. They need to be able to carry water. That's who's getting it.
Yeah. The guy probably lives in a nice place and you know,
yeah.
Oh yeah.
Just insane. It's just insane, man. And you know, some of this stuff hits when you start to travel, you start to see some of this stuff. I mean, when I was in Kiev, there was a big protest going on because Yanukovych had just been ousted maybe a year before I got there. I'm at Hotel Ukraine, downtown Kiev. There's all these pictures of people who he essentially murdered.
Yep.
He had they were protesting. They were college students. They were protesting the fact that he was tied to the Russians and he was running the Ukrainian government. And the Ukrainians don't really like the Russians. And
their borders get destroyed like every couple of years.
They just take Crimea whenever they feel like it, you know, and take part of our country. And yeah. So anyway, there's a bunch of people. They were fighting in the east. And apparently, I think the way it went, there's protests and Yanukovych just sent in a military and just shot a bunch of students.
Yep.
And there was pictures of them lined up the street. And I'm like, I wonder what all these pictures are. And I lived in a hood long enough. Like as soon as I get shot, they put a picture up and RIP and flowers and stuff. And I'm like, wow, this is fucking crazy. I'm staying at a hotel where all these people were massacred like a year ago. Yeah. And there's all these protests, but this time it's old people. And I'm like, why are these old people protesting? Well, after he got ousted, their currency went from 1/5 the value of the US dollar to 1/25 the value of the US dollar. So these old people were on the cusp of retirement and they had saved up, say you lived in Ukraine, I mean, maybe you save up $10,000 in your life to retire on. Now that $10,000 is worth $2,000.
Yep.
Man. It's got the purchasing power of $2,000. So you saved all your life probably doing shit work in Ukraine. I mean, these older people, I mean, they lived in Ukraine when it was a fucking problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now they have no money.
You just lost 80% of your life's work.
80% of all your savings like that. Because of one guy who was corrupt and built a palace that I went to. Yeah. It was the ugliest palace. It looked like somebody took the Parthenon and mixed it with a log cabin. It was a disgusting. And when you walk into this place and there's this, he's got his own chapel. You know, they're Orthodox or whatever. So he's got his own little chapel.
Yep.
This entire chapel was gold. It was great, like gold. He had a piano that John Lennon owned and signed in his house. But this house, I mean, it was expensive, but it was ugly. It was like, dude, at least if you're going to be corrupt, you're going to build a house. at least build something that looks halfway decent, right, man. Like, I'd be ashamed. Like, my tax dollars went to build this monstrosity, right? And, you know, I'm criticizing the damn look at the house the whole time I'm there. But, I mean, it's the way it is in some of these places. And you think Europe. Oh, Europe. You know, everything in Europe's nice, right? Yeah. No.
Like, yeah, no, that the village that my mom grew up in is literally like 40 people. Maybe it's on the outskirts. It's an area called Sade Natorisu, which is about 15 minutes outside of Košice, which is the second biggest town in Slovakia. And when I go over there, I just went back to visit last year. No, it would have been 2 years ago. Last year was COVID. 2020 is just kind of like a boop in my brain. So 2019, I went over, and it's still, I mean, you can, the appreciation of the simplicity that's still there, because now it's not, you know, it's not Ukraine. The Ukraine is still very unstable. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of friends that immigrated from Ukraine.
Really cheap beer.
Still very, very cheap beer. Pivo. A lot of pivo and vino. But their method of life is you only take what you need for the day that you need it. And that's what I think is so cool about that mentality, is that because the sad part about how that mentality got formed is that if you have surplus, it's going to get taken from you.
So, because of communism.
Because of communism. So you have to hide as much of the stuff that you have to trade, or the monetary things that you have in order to purchase. But you just walk to the store, and me and my grandpa would walk to the store every day. We would get the food that we need for the day, walk back, and then that was it. You know, and then the majority of the other stuff is like potatoes that they planted in the backyard. And my grandparents, my grandfather is 85 now, and still him and my 84-year-old grandmother have their own garden. They farm their own stuff, because to your guys' points, when all the currency stuff is moving around, you know, you can't rely on anything when you get older. They're still farming their own food to make sure that they can eat.
And here we are watching YouTube videos and roll off the couch, you know, with our extra time,
yeah,
and go to the pantry and grab some Cheetos. Yeah. And we've got all that extra time, and we're blessed with all that extra time to do something, not just for ourselves and build companies and hire people and do things like that, but also maybe help people in another part of the world. Mm. But instead, here we are, lazy Americans, all entitled, sitting around doing nothing. And, you know, your grandpa had to spend, 3 hours of his day?
Yeah.
Just to go get food for that day?
Yeah. Still cutting grass with a scythe, you know, like there's no,
which is kind of badass, by the way.
It's one of the, he swears by it, dude. Like, he's 85 years old, and he had heart issues, so he has a pacemaker and everything now. He still goes out and still cuts down with a scythe. I mean, they call it.
If I seen your grandpa out there cutting shit with a scythe, I'd be like, not fucking going over there.
Yeah, they call it a košik, but he was like, Janičko, because that's what they call me in Slovakia, is Janičko. But he was like, Janičko, he was like, this is the key to life. He was like, you stay fit. He's 85 years old, still goes on jogs with the dog and everything like that. He was like, you don't replace the things that are manual labor. He was like, it's therapeutic. He was like, it gets your mind off of things, and it allows you to connect with nature. And it's super, super important to them. That's part of their culture, is like, get your bare feet in the grass and work the land. And he was like, and then this medial task is like building up that little bit of sweat and actually, you know, taking down a field or harvesting some potatoes. He was like, it's a tangible start and tangible end. You're like, I did something productive today. And he was like, it's amazing what happens when you ground yourself in the earth, and when you actually do something productive to feed your family. And he would say that is like, as a man, he was like, there's nothing more valuable to your spirit or your mentality than hard work and providing for your family.
Yep. Yeah. And look at what we don't even listen to old people in this country. You know,
the 15-year-olds know just everything.
Put him in a retirement home or whatever. And yeah, listen to the dude on TikTok who, you know, just popped out of his mom's womb, like, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. Listen to that kid, because he can dance on TikTok or whatever.
Right.
It's just crazy to me. And like, I mean, your grandpa, like, so much knowledge from the old school, you know, when people had it hard. And, you know, if shit went down, right, grandpa would still be moving along.
Kick ass.
And all these kids would be out here killing each other over box of crackers.
Yeah. And what's scary is, like, when I talk to them, dude, like, I tell people all the time, if you know how to VPN and you know how to VPN out to another country and look at news and the way that they're talking about us
now. Yeah.
My grandparents are scared, man. Like, my grandparents are like, things look bad. You know, like, we've lived in this life and we know what's going on and we have these types of things going on. But people are talking about the United States like, you know, we're going downhill. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of issues that are happening. They're not respecting the government as much. And
it's funny you say that, because when I was over in Africa, people were talking about the United States going downhill and not being, they viewed us as the powerhouse of the world for as long as my liaisons have lived.
Yeah.
And they said, nope, China's taking over. That's the word on the street over in Africa.
Yep.
I was like, fuck.
It's crazy, man. And that's like coming from my grandparents who like I said, it, what, like 20 minutes ago, that they're not that far removed from having Russian occupation and knowing what that feels like. And Russians, you know, they were assholes at that point in time. And so they're not that far removed. They know exactly what that's like. They know what whitewashing the media is like. They know what control of
look what it does to our
censorship
people.
Is
like, I don't know. You guys have all experienced, but
I'm going to tape it to your face.
At Xavier, the big thing, the biggest news that people are outcrying about right now is they just banned travel for sports teams, for clubs. And everyone's signing a petition right now online. And everyone's like, oh, I post it on their Instagram. It's in their links and their bios. I signed this petition. And it's like, yes, okay, cool. But that's the problem in the world that needs to be addressed right now. Not Uganda not having water or human rights everywhere. Like, we're basing everything we're doing right now, at least right now, is your club sports teams can't travel.
Yeah. And I mean, to speak to that, I don't want to disrespect the fact that that's what they care about, because if somebody really cares about that and their club sports is what makes them happy, like, all right, sign the petition. I don't think it has to be an or. I think it could be an and, where you care about the club petition. But at the club competitions that you go to, you carry your Ripple bottle with you, knowing that you're also creating impact over there in Uganda.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think we can claim to be a global society if we're not willing. I think the best way to take care of your global society is to base everything on individual merit and actually try to form a true meritocracy. You know, like, if you are the best person for that slot, push yourself and you are the best person for that slot. That was what I loved about the military. They didn't give a shit if you were black, yellow, purple, green. If you're from a different country and you're trying to get citizenship, if you're kicking ass and you spend the time and grade and you earn that rank, you earn the respect of your team and you execute. And it was really hard for me transitioning to civilian life, because I'm like, man, there's a lot of lazy bastards out here.
Which is why people in the military hate the guys who come in as lieutenants. What is that?
ROTC
guys.
The
ROTC.
Dude, I had an ROTC cadet come in, and he came in and he had like 6 months in service, right? So he's a fresh butter bar. Butter bar meaning just like, you know, fresh out of ROTC. He hadn't been in super long, but he's been put in charge of troops. And so I had this old chief master sergeant that, I mean, this dude had been in like 27 years, right? Been on like 7 deployments to Afghanistan, was in the Gulf, like hard motherfucker, just like knew his shit. And he was on the phone who I later found out was our wing commander. So he's on the phone and LT comes up and is like, he like knocks on his door. He's like, Hey Sarge, hey chief, I got to talk to you. And the chief like holds up his fingers, like, hold on, like, give me a second. I'm on the phone. Like, be courteous. And he knocks again. He's like, chief, like, I need to talk to you like right now. And the chief just kind of laughs on the phone, right? And he's like, hold on, ma'am. Like, I need to go talk to this LT. Hangs up. The LT starts yelling at the chief, like, about respect and, like, some other stuff like this. And I was like, oh, shit. I was like, this is not going to be good. Because he's about getting ready to retire.
So there's the chain of command, and this guy's taking advantage of it. He's not being respectful.
Yeah, he's trying to leverage his rank. And I always, because I was the sergeant in charge of training for my last 2 years in the career. So I literally would tell my troops all the time when they're trainees coming in, trying to, you know, make a bunch of asshole 18-year-olds understand that they're about to get their butts kicked at boot. It's like, hey, guys, like, if you have to leverage your rank, you've lost.
Yeah.
If you have to rely on your rank to get people to listen to you, you suck.
Yeah.
And so this LT is like messing with this chief now, tries to call him to the position of attention. The chief just laughs, calls him to the position of attention. The LT snaps to, and the chief is like ripping him a new asshole at this point. He's like, you don't know shit. And they're like letting him go. And our wing commander at the time, our squadron commander was like this 5'6" woman named Sergeant Shiflett or Major Shiflett. So she comes in and she's like, what is going on right now? And this lieutenant is like, well, I needed to talk to this chief, and chief blah blah blah, and like wouldn't talk to me and everything. And Major was like, listen, she was like, you're gonna learn this lesson the hard way right now, and I'm glad that this is happening earlier on in your career. This man knows more about what it means to succeed in the military than you will ever understand by the way that you're acting right now. So she's like, you either figure out how to make him your mentor and listen to every fucking thing he's telling you to do, or get out.
This is a problem in society in general.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what's happening right now. It's like we talked about earlier. You got a bunch of kids right now that think they know everything in the world, and they're not listening. I mean, it happened when I was a kid. I mean, I thought I knew everything, you know, and then, you know, I'm sure generations before me thought they knew better than their parents, you know, and it's just a thing that I think you just.
I don't understand why people underestimate the value in being a student. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the only time in your life that you have permission to fuck up on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to care.
Well, like, Asian people understand it. I mean, in Korea, you know, if a person is a day older than you, you have to refer to them as like Opa.
Yeah.
Like, there's like there's a respect for someone who's an hour older than you. You have to refer to them as a different thing than somebody who's younger than you. Right. So you have to respect your elders. And it's, in a way, you know, people think, you know, we talked about America being the greatest place in the world, but there are some things we can learn from some of these other cultures too, that we think we're so superior and we're so great all the time, but there are things that they're doing right.
I always tell people, look at the suicide rates, look at the rates of depression in other countries, mm-hmm. look at the rates of like all this other stuff. There's a reason why suicide rates increase as you increase income.
Yeah.
You know, because like there's a lot of poor people pressure. I know that are happy as shit.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people that I know in other countries that are like perfectly content, because you know, their version of reality has not expanded beyond what they know, but why not be happy with some of that simple stuff?
Why not?
You know, and understanding that respect for your elders, it gives you something to lean on. I can't even imagine being 15 years old, being on TikTok, trying to preach something, getting internet trolls in my comments. I don't have the emotional stability to deal with that.
Yeah, that's,
I don't
that's
have
a
the
good
emotional
point.
Stability
that's
to get attacked
point.
By people trying to destroy my ideology and everything I believe. I haven't built the coping mechanisms for that yet. I'm not even cognizant of what that empathy doesn't even kick in fully till you're like 17.
Yeah. Well, if somebody came into my backyard and put a well in, I'd be like, that's cool. But you're the people you're building the wells for. Like, this is the perfect thing. It's like if anyone in America had somebody come in their backyard, build a well, it'd be a novelty.
Right.
It would be a novelty. But it's actually making real impact in these communities.
Yeah. 2,000 people will forever have access to clean water. Like,
and a lot of kids are not going to get killed by vipers or get raped or murdered in the woods.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like,
what are your projections for this? How many wells in the next 10 years?
That's a great question.
I guess you can't even project 10 years. Let's just say
my goal is
5 years.
All right. 5 to 10 years. My goal is 1,000 wells. So 1,000,000 bottles in that time. I think it's
totally doable.
Yeah, very reasonable. Yeah.
How many bottles does Yeti and how many bottles do they sell every year?
Well, just on Amazon, Hydro Flask sells our same like style 32 ounces. They sell at 15,000 every single month, just in that one style. So it's very reasonable. We just have to get our message out. Mm-hmm. So like podcasts, like
that's 15 wells a month.
15 wells a month. Yeah.
And Hydro Flask are more expensive.
Yeah.
How many people in each village that these wells could?
So
serve.
It depends on the village, but right around in between 1,000 to 4,000 per village.
Okay, so let's just say 2,000. I'll say 3,000.
Yeah,
times 15,000 wells.
15 wells
or 15 wells. 15 yeah. wells times say 400 or 4,000. 400. Say
4,000 people max. 4,000 usually people. In a community.
60,000 people.
Yeah, 60,000 people. That's just with one style of bottle. Let us introduce a tumbler. Let us introduce a smaller bottle. Let us like a bigger bottle. Let's do coolers. Like we're starting with drinkware because water is something that I believe you have to have water to be able to do other life functions, just to be able to like build your community and grow your community. So that's why I think it's so important and why we're starting there. But let us get rolling. Let us really make a ripple in the world. It's going to be dangerous so much to the point where sometimes I get scared thinking out into the future. Like, our brand is going to be so powerful and uplifting people that some of these people with lots of money, the Yeti and Hydro Flask that are making $1 billion a year. Am I a little fearful for my life and the people that I'm going to start ruffling some feathers that have had money for a long time? Yeah, a little bit.
It'd probably be easier for them just to align with you, especially if you've got, if you've got a large following and you got a lot of people behind you that know you were the one who originated all this, it would just be easy for them to just say, look, he's already built a community. He's a good guy. He's doing good work. He's got the network. He's got the supply chain figured out. He's got connections into these countries. we'll just throw $5 million at him.
Yeah. My ultimate win is when Hydro Flask and Yeti donate to our nonprofit to build wells through their program.
That's, I mean, if I was them, that's what I would do. I mean, I would donate to your cause.
Yeah.
And I would use my buying power to reduce your costs.
Yeah.
And to partner and say, hey, look, I want you to do this. Do what you're doing. We're just going to cut the cost in half because we have, you know, the buying power. We buy so many of these things, yeah, you know, they sell them to us for half of what they're selling to you for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why not?
And imagine how powerful that is. Imagine how powerful it is for a 20-year-old kid to come up with an idea that could change an entire ecosystem.
You're doing it.
Of a niche product that would allow people to align to something that would solve exponentially more problems. I mean, he was talking about one district having like what, 30 something villages in it.
There's 37 villages in the sub district of the Wakizo.
Yeah. So you have companies, I mean, there's Arctic out there. I'm thinking of all this stuff we did in competitive analyses on, right? So there's Arctic out there. There's Hydro Flask out there. There's Yeti out there. There's Stanley Thermoses. There's like all of these brands that do drinkware specifically. Mm-hmm. And you start to get those people aligned and not just have one company. But what Joe keeps talking to me about and what our conversations are structured around is like, how do we perpetuate the movement so that it's universal across the industry and that movement, that community comes in and you have that backing? Because the end goal is not to just make money. The end goal is to inspire other people to say, hey, if you do this and you align with this, we can solve the water crisis. And then that's one checkbox off of our list and we can move on to solving another problem.
Yep. Yeah. Why? Bill Gates should get behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Bill Gates actually spent billions and billions of dollars to help solve the world water crisis, but he did it on technology that isn't transferable to Africa. And I say this with like coming out of love for Bill Gates that he wanted to do this.
The application was wrong.
Yeah. He used engineers to create a $1 million piece of equipment that takes like feces and turns it, takes the water out of it, cleans, purifies it, and like people can drink from it. Cool idea. Like great that you were able to engineer that. But at the same time, like he can't figure out how to get it over to like Africa.
Yeah.
For some reason. All right. It's Bill. I'm thinking Microsoft Bill Gates, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Cool. For some reason, that name wasn't resonating in my mind the right way. I was thinking of the president, Bill Clinton. That's what I was thinking.
Oh, Bill Clinton, not Bill Gates.
Yeah. Not Bill Gates. I knew I was talking about Bill Gates.
Bill Gates is probably listening to my podcast, which would be dope. He's listening. He's like, what the heck? I didn't do any of that shit. Maybe I did. I don't.
Well, even then.
Who's responsible for this?
No. I watched the whole documentary on it. He's trying to do great work and he's trying to do polio vaccines too. Well, another thing I want to do is on the World Health Organization is the next disease they're trying to eradicate is polio. Well, boom. All right.
Vaccine invented in the Nasty Natty. University of Cincinnati. Yep.
Shout out to Cincinnati.
Dude, I love that you call it that, bro. I call Canton the Dirty 330.
Yeah, there you go.
But my thing is leveraging high quality product to solve real world problems. He went in there and he's doing a great job with polio, more so than I believe with water. But shots for shots is my whole thought process when we expand an alcohol beverage line that you take a shot. Somebody else is getting a shot in their arm. Instead of like a shot, like an alcoholic shot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But to be able to vaccinate these people as using that as the vehicle to raise money, because without money, you can't create change. I'm a firm believer in that. And that's why we're a for-profit.
You got to, man. And you got to have money. You got to be able to grow. You got to be able to scale. You got to need investors, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that's just facts. And somehow we were able to create a vaccine for COVID that we distributed throughout the entire world in the matter of months.
Yeah. Why can't we do that with polio?
But polio though, polio has been around for a long time.
I mean, it's not a huge problem anymore, at least in Uganda where I was at, but there was 80-year-olds that were like crippled, like just like their legs were crippled and they were like polio survivors. Like,
jeez, oh, Pete. Yeah. It's crazy,
not a huge problem, but it's something that can and should be eradicated if we put the right resources in the right places.
I think that like the whole Bill Gates thing idea, there's a lot of people that I think are just overthinking shit. You know, they want to research something and like invent something really, really cool.
I don't know if it's just because we grew shit.
Why did they create that big machine that turns feces into clean water? You can go, use millions, if not billions of dollars to help create that on top of other stuff. There's you could have gave just access to clean water. Like,
yeah.
You know how many people would have access to clean water? Like, you have to give them water first before you can innovate. Like, we gave access to clean water through this water pumps, the solar pump system. Like, there's a water tower. But, like, we gave them that first with the idea that we put the infrastructure that we can run water lines to every single household in the district. But first, they have to be able to have clean water.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't do all the bells and whistles until you've had that foundation. You know how many fucking people could have had clean water? That fires me up right now. I'm so pissed. I think it was $1 billion that he spent on the project.
Dude, there's just misappropriation of funds. Yeah. Like, so many places. He, like, even got, in our own country.
He,
like,
got Warren Buffett to support him in this whole venture and stuff. And I'm like, holy shit, these are two billionaires that care about the water crisis. How fucking amazing. Why did people not get clean access to water?
Dude, why does Nancy Pelosi have $60 million in the bank and have a $30,000 refrigerator for ice cream?
Oh,
like, dude. That's how many wells? $30,000 right there. Like, right. Ditch the, like, sell that shit to Oprah.
That'd be almost four wells. That'd be about 8,000 to 10,000.
Sell that freezer to Oprah. I know she likes ice cream. Her favorite ice cream is Grater's ice cream right down here.
Oh my God. Blackberry.
Black raspberry chip. Yeah, bro. Like, dude, you know she wants a freezer. So she sells it to Oprah. You take the $30,000 and you go build some wells.
Yeah.
There you go. Thanks, Pelosi.
Or even relife some of the wells, because some organizations going with good intentions dig a well and leave, and then it's stuck there.
That's another thing we're working on is there's a lot of these wells that are just broken. They're not fixed. So in some cases, if we're not able to drill them a modern well because just for some reason the landscaping doesn't work out, we can't get the equipment back there, we're going to go in and just fix all their wells and make sure that every single month we go back and make sure that it's working for them.
Nice.
Like,
there's a whole entire, like, economy here. I mean, you can pay people in Uganda, give them jobs to just maintain the wells.
Yeah.
Pay them a decent wage for Uganda. It's not going to cost you guys a ton of money because that's not a whole lot of money that you'd have to pay somebody.
No.
But now you give one, two, maybe three people a job.
Yeah. I'm giving somebody $50 a month to go in and just make sure the well's working. Not even to, like, to fix the well, just to, like, go make sure it's working, take pictures, talk to the villagers, make sure it works. $50 is a lot of money there.
Like, think of the ripple effect that, and this is my child behavioral psych side coming out, but, like, think of the ripple effect that type of economic stimulation at the adult level would provide for the stability of mental cognition in the kids.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're affecting the next generation, giving them that bottom level of Maslow's hierarchy, seeing that
so they can build
or
dad
is inspiring because they're working entrepreneurial and that's what kids need. They need to be able to see somebody intimate inside of their lives. There's always one person. Like, it may not be parents, you know, it may not be somebody inside of your bloodline, but there's always one person generally that a child can relate to and look at and be like, that is who I want to emulate.
Yep.
If that person doesn't exist, then it's really hard for a kid to see anything outside of what their life is, especially if it's shit. And so being able to provide that economic stimulation would do a lot outside of just providing that person that's directly making that money benefit.
It's deeper than water.
Yeah. And so even to speak to that is I left a camera over there for them to be able to take pictures of the well, the villagers. And it was a 24-year-old kid. His name's Didas. He's freaking, I don't know.
That's kind of a sweet name.
Yeah. It's like, he said it's Adidas, but without the A. So it's just
Yeah.
Dude was freaking amazing. I loved hearing stories from him about how he's lived over there, but I gave him this camera to be able to take pictures. And so when I was teaching him, I was like, hey, you could start a side hustle over here of taking pictures for people with this camera. Like, here's this camera. Take pictures once a month. Go be a photographer.
Wedding photographer or something. Or
he's like, whoa, like, I can make money that way. Like,
dude,
yeah, you're
take
right.
Take pictures of, like, the military at these, like, crossings and send them to National Geographic and sell them to them.
Yeah.
Something
yeah.
like.
Yeah. So my hope is that he really takes that to heart and is able to provide an income because he still lives at home, helps his family make money to be able to put food on the
That'd
table.
Be dope.
But, yeah, I'm hoping.
It's one piece of equipment, man. It's just like the Watts of Love people. It's just like one thing. You never know how that's going to change like green economy.
That story's wild.
It's pretty awesome, man. It reminds me of like when you started talking about when I met Zach and he was telling me about this bottle thing. It just reminded me of that Watts of Love thing. I'm like, totally, that makes sense. Like, it's the same concept. It's like one little thing could change these people's lives and provide them that base level of human need that can allow them to build from that. Right.
Yeah. There was
one. You go ahead.
I was the Watts of Love and Ripple remind me. I was just reading about a slum in Tanzania. Had one of the worst premature death rates in the world. Anywhere. Problems with overcrowding, with clean water, different disease, all sorts of things that we were facing. And the UN set up this whole international council to try and solve it. And they came up with these ridiculously $10 million, massively expensive 10-year plans to try and solve these problems. And they weren't getting anywhere because it was too expensive and would take too long. And then Procter & Gamble, who is in Cincinnati, this was back in, I think, the 80s or the 90s, were developing antibacterial soap. And they were testing it out. So they gave one of the researchers from this UN summit a bunch of soap. And the UN researcher started dispersing it in the community with instructions of how to wash your hands, just lather it and then rinse it with water, and then when to do it, when you cook, when you change your baby's diaper, after you go to the bathroom, basic steps. And it cut the premature death rate by 37% in this community.
Yeah, man.
And it ties into what you were saying with Watts for Life or with Ripple, because what it led me to realize is, even for me, when I try and solve problems sometimes, with how complex the world and society that we live in is, it's easy to get like decision paralysis and not do anything.
Yeah.
But something as simple as a checklist of how to wash your hands can have that big of an impact, or a Watts for Life, or providing water.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, sorry to cut you off.
No, you're good. Going back to your point, I was just going to say what I'm focused on is communicating to everyone here that, like, you just got to keep it simple. Like, it's as simple as buying a bottle to help give water to somebody. Like, and that's our whole business model. Even when I was talking to the engineers for like the school that we plan to build, like for the vocational school with the t-shirts, hats, hoodies, all that, they wrote out a plan for $170,000, like multi-story building. I said, fuck no, I will not spend $170,000 on a school. Like, It does not need to be crazy. I said, you know what we need? We need 4 classrooms. We need an office building. And then we need 3 workshop areas. I said, I don't care if it has fucking rock floors. I don't need tiles. I don't need this. It needs lights. It needs plumbing. Mm-hmm. It needs chairs and it needs equipment in there. I said, we're going to do this. We're going to build the buildings for about $25,000. And then we're going to put equipment for between $10,000 and $15,000. And that's what we're going to do. I said, I don't care if the walls have fucking drywall. You know what? The kids don't care if the walls have fucking drywall. You know what they care about? Is that we're placing teachers in these buildings that can teach them the skills to make money. You keep it simple. Why the hell would I build a $170,000 building?
Yeah.
There's no point in that. I said, you know how many fucking wells that is? I think that's more than 10.
Let the Chinese do it. They're already stealing all the African land in exchange for building a road and a school or whatever they're doing right now, taking advantage of those people.
There was a Chinese school there. It was literally called the Chinese school. Yeah. Where they taught them like Chinese cultures and practices.
Communism.
I was like, what? Like, what is it? Why do they have Chinese schools?
That's where it's going to start.
Well, people here think it's a good idea too, but it's not going
to
happen.
We're going to teach them side hustles to be able to turn into full-time jobs.
I hope so, man. That's all I'm trying to do, man. And it's just, you know, if you're an activist, if you want to help people, if you want to do something, actually do something, you know? Like, nobody cares about you saying you're this big, I'm a nice person, I'm a good person because I believe this or that. Put your money where your mouth is. Yeah. Put your time where your mouth is.
You vote with your dollars.
You vote with your dollars. Do something. Yeah, do something. Do something actionable. Do something big. So, anyway, well, I'm glad you guys came on. Like, this is normally an hour. I think we're at an hour and a half right now.
Oh, man.
And I can sit here and talk to you guys for probably 3 hours.
This is flown by.
It's just flying by, man. But yeah, talk. Let's Zach, tell us how people can get in on this and how they can donate, or I mean, how do they reach out? I mean, you're here in Cincinnati. A lot of our listeners are in Cincinnati. Like, what if they want to help?
Go to weareTheRipple.com and buy a bottle. Joey can speak to that. I'm sure that's the main thing. And eventually, we will at some point be taking donations. We're still waiting on the IRS tax form back. But it's as simple as buying a bottle. He said it a couple dozen times already on this. And it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely. I know there's a bunch of business people listening to this. So Christmas is coming up. If you want a meaningful Christmas present to pass on to your workers, Ripple bottles are great. We can engrave your company's logo on them. And if you got a big company, I'm working on trying to get out to Twitter and networking there. But like, we really envision big companies buying 1,000 bottles if they have 1,000 employees. And we'll put your company's logo and engravings out there on the well, and your company will be able to network and market the fact that you build a well.
Love it. One more time, give us the website.
WeAreTheRipple.com.
Awesome, guys. And what on Instagram? What's your handle on Instagram?
Joe Knopp, KNOPP, and then underscore.
Okay. And they could see all your photos on there from yeah. Uganda and everything? And
I think the Ripple account is also We Are The Ripple.
Yeah, the Instagram. Ripple account's We Are The Ripple. We post on there a lot, but then for all like the journey of how we're building is more of my personal, not to bombard the Ripple Instagram.
All right. Awesome, guys. Well, I appreciate your time. Thanks a lot. And anybody listening, definitely check out the website, check out the Instas. And yeah, we'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Side Hustle City. Well, you've heard from our guests. Now let's hear from you. Join our community on Facebook, Side Hustle City. It's a group where people share ideas, share their inspirational stories, and motivate each other to be successful and turn their side hustle into their main hustle. We'll see you there, and we'll see you next week on the show. Thank you.